Hi, and welcome to the 13th episode of the Language Mandarins podcast. My name is Jonathan. Yesterday I had the pleasure of speaking with Coco the Polyglot, so here's the interview. I hope you enjoy this.
Hi.
Hi.
So, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So, let's say, tell me a little bit about your experience with the language learning. You have a blog, you have the website. How long have you been learning?
I would say I've been learning languages for about like 7 or 8 years now.
Oh, okay.
Or at least seriously. I originally had an interest in learning languages for about, or since I was about 13 years old.
Okay, cool.
And it was originally with Italian.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really interested in it, but I lost my motivation for learning it until later. And then my friends got me into Japanese, mm-hmm. Japanese culture and Japanese language. And I became really interested in learning about Japan. And I even visited Japan with my father in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped motivate me to continue learning Japanese.
Okay. And do you still continue with your Italian as well, or do you focus a little more?
I need to come back to it.
Okay.
Yeah. But I've stuck with Japanese and German for like about roughly 8 years, more or less.
Okay.
And then in 2014, I started learning Catalan.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. And through independent study or through taking... classes, formal classes, or
I did a little bit of both. When I took 2 years of Japanese in school, mm-hmm. And then the rest has just been on my own through websites such as Link or Italki or Memrise.
Oh, okay. Do you also teach on Italki?
Yes, I do. I teach English, Swedish, and Danish.
Oh, okay. Nice. Are you originally from Scandinavia or?
Yes. Oh, okay. I was born in Uppsala, which is part of it's in Stockholm. It's a little bit, but some of it's outside of Stockholm as well.
Okay. And are you based in the States?
Yes. Right now I'm based in Utah.
Oh, okay. Nice. Okay. And how long have you been living in the U.S.?
For about 12 years now.
Nice. Okay. So yeah, you seem to have had an opportunity to travel a little bit, learn mm-hmm. languages as well. Okay. And what is in general your methodology? I suppose it's kind of gradually taking shape over the years.
I wouldn't say I necessarily have like a one specific method, but I would say definitely the input-based method of Link has really helped out a lot, but also using the Italki challenges and being able to speak more has also helped as well.
Cool.
I took like a lot of inspiration from the blog. I don't think it's active anymore, but it was all Japanese all the time.
Okay.
That one was a great one. And then, of course, Lindsay Does Languages. It's okay. Also inspired me a lot, okay. Especially with her Instagram language challenge.
Oh, nice. Tell me, tell listeners a little bit more about those links that you've given us. So, for example, with Lindsay, what does she do for the language challenge on Instagram?
She gives you a bunch of prompts to use, whether it's like a keyword or like some phrases or... And then you would translate them into your target languages. And you can either take a picture of it, or I use an app called Fonto, and then just like you type text onto it.
Okay. Which languages have you interacted with in those challenges?
Japanese, German, and Catalan.
Nice. Okay. And how has that been beneficial for your language learning?
It helps keep me motivated. It helps me learn new words every single day, especially like words that I may have forgotten or haven't been used a lot.
Okay. How often are those challenges?
She does one at least every month. one every month.
Oh, okay, cool. And you also mentioned the website Link. Can you tell people a little bit about that one?
Link is a website where they have user-provided content and where it's mostly based on listening and reading. And so they'll have like a bunch of text that you can read in your target language. And then they have words that are highlighted, and you can click on words you're not familiar with, and it will highlight a blue word and change it yellow. And then it will give you the meaning of the word or phrase. And then you can highlight all that in the text, and then those highlighted words become different flashcards that you can use to repeat.
Okay, so it's an integrated process to gauge how many words you're familiar with and to see the difficulty level of a new text based on... Yeah. Okay, nice, yeah. I've watched several YouTube videos from Steve Kaufman, and he seems to be like a really leading polyglot and launched this website. I tested it a few years ago. When it was kind of mostly beta. Now it seems to be getting pretty well developed and even kind of having a membership or kind of premium features. So so for listeners, if you've tried Link a few years ago like me did, like I did, go back, check it out again. I think it's developing pretty well.
Yeah, I think so too.
Okay.
And it's a great way to get my like listening and reading in.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And with the Ateki challenge, how does that work?
Every so often they will have a challenge where you devote, I think it varies, but I think like the first one I did was like 25 lessons with a tutor for that entire period that they do. So I think it's like a month and a half.
Okay.
If I remember correctly. And I think I participated in about like four of them. The first two I didn't finish them, but the subsequent ones I was able to get further in and feel more confident with learning languages. It actually helped build up my Catalan from like zero to like having some decent basic knowledge of Catalan.
Nice. Okay. And have you traveled to Barcelona or North Eastern Spain?
Unfortunately, not yet.
Oh, okay, nice.
It's definitely one of the places I do want to visit.
Cool. And do you, when you're learning, let's say these, if you're going to start a new language, because I've seen you have an extensive list in your blog. How soon would you start speaking with a native speaker?
I usually want to get like the basics down, like learn the basics down, and then start speaking with a native speaker. So I would say within like the first week.
Okay. Are you familiar with Benny Lewis and his speak in a week method?
Yeah, I've heard of Benny Lewis quite a bit, and a lot of his challenges are very inspiring, but I haven't actually done them yet.
Okay. Yeah, I started one like 2 months ago at the beginning of January. And it was also, I didn't exactly discover him directly. It was through somebody else. And I'm in the process of learning Russian. And there's a really excellent language learning community called Language Heroes on VK. They're organized by this girl, Eugenia Kasheva. And what she does, she kind of does a 90-day challenge. Learning the language. And at the beginning of January, she got some sponsorship with Benny, and she kind of implemented the speak in a week challenge. And it was, you need to pick a new language, not one you've been learning before. So I just decided to pick up a little bit of Turkish, and I was going through Benny's method of, okay, go to Omniglot. I suppose you're familiar with
Omniglot. Yes, yeah, the phrases. That site I've known for several years. It's been like one of my favorite blogs and resource and
just. Yeah, it's excellent. Simon does an excellent job maintaining the site. And for people who aren't aware, well, in this case, with the Speak in a Week, Benny recommends taking what are like the travel phrases section, which would be things like hello, how are you, nice to meet you, thank you, goodbye. And then they have some audio files. Most of them have audio files that you can yeah. listen to. And then little by little, Benny is saying, okay, develop your script. So kind of personalize some of this content to yourself to mm-hmm. be able to say, okay, what is it you do in life? Are you a teacher? Are you a student? Talk about your profession. Do you have a family? Do you have kids? Talk about that. What are your interests or hobbies? And be able to say a few things and maybe be able to ask some questions to the person you're speaking to. And he does mention that he doesn't care too much about the grammatically correct nature at the beginning, like speaking like Tarzan is acceptable. Yeah. I'm a bit of a perfectionist, I'd say, and I do like getting into some of the details or the bigger picture of a new language so I can kind of sound a little bit more coherent.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been quite known in the past to like use grammar and to kind of help me, because I'm curious to see how the language works.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it has helped me, but I just want to make sure that I don't like only focus on the grammar. I feel like that has like stopped me a couple times, but
okay.
here and there, and just being able to use it right away.
Mm-hmm. How much importance do you place on maybe writing and reading at the beginning?
Reading, I would say I try to get a lot of like passive knowledge of the language. That way I can actually understand what's being said to me, even if I can't repeat it back. Writing is something that I need to do a lot more work on, but I quite like doing it. I remember I had a Japanese blog for a while where all I did was write in Japanese on it.
Nice.
To help practice my Japanese.
Okay.
But I realized that it was a little counterproductive because there were no native speakers that were correcting it or commenting on it. So.
Okay, I see. Yeah.
Italki and Lang 8 for like the corrections.
Okay. Nice. And how frequently would you say you post notebook entries or text entries?
Not as often as I'd like to. I think I did a lot of that like in the past. I probably did maybe like once a week on the Japanese blog.
Okay. And do you do YouTube videos as well, or?
I do have a YouTube channel, but I haven't been really keeping that channel very active. I think the last video I did was, actually it was from this year. It was a review of Flash Sticks.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people talking about that recently. Tell me a little bit about that. Unfortunately, I haven't seen that video yet, but do you recommend using Flash Sticks?
Yeah, I mean, it is like a bunch of flashcards that are pre-made for you. But what's really cool about them is that not only are they sticky notes that you can stick up on like the wall or something, they also have like a little silhouetted picture of it, and then you can use your phone to take a picture of it, and it will have like a native speaker pop up and say the word or phrase that you're learning.
So it interacts with your camera?
Yeah. It has a little bit ways to go, especially since you can also take photos with of certain objects in your house, and you can have it try to translate the word for you.
Oh, okay. So you could have kind of an interpreter in your pocket looking at what you're looking at. Oh, nice. Okay. So it's like Periscope meets the Google barcode scanner kind of. That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. And which platforms do you like the most in terms of like social networking? Which ones do you find more useful where you get kind of engagement with native speakers or with fellow language learners? Where do you find your kind of where you get most productive?
I think I'm most productive on Italki, like especially since I can find both students and fellow language learners. And there's also any language community that has like a forum on it is really good in my opinion, because especially with a lot of active users. I would say like that link forum also is quite nice as well. Cool. But yeah, I would definitely say Italki is definitely a go-to resource for me that I use quite a bit as like the most used.
Right. And how long have you been on Italki?
It'll be about 3 years in April.
Nice. Okay. Yeah, I just got started, I'd say probably in August or so. Some learners were telling me about it and recommending it for at least the notebook entry function. Mm-hmm. And then I set up a teacher account in October. And so far I've had about a handful of students and probably I'm getting close to about 50 classes that I've taught on there. So it's been a nice platform for finding students and finding other native speakers to help kind of correct my texts. And it's been a good platform so far.
What I love about Italki is that they have languages that aren't so common, like Catalan, Azeri, Ukrainian.
Mm-hmm. So what in those cases, when you have what other people might call an obscure language, there's no such thing as obscure because, somebody speaks it.
Less commonly spoken language.
Yeah, I guess that's a nicer way to say it. But what do you do when there aren't many resources available?
I try to find as much authentic content as I can within the language, and that's why I provided resource lists on my website for certain languages, so that way people who had trouble finding materials or something of interest in their target language, they could use my resources to help them motivate them to learn that language.
So for listeners who would like to consult those lists, what is your website URL?
It's Koko the Polyglot. Koko spelled KOKOTHEPOLYGOLT.net.
Okay, and in the section, it's easy to find these resource links?
Yeah, it should be under language resources, and then it will scroll down, and then it will give you a bunch of resources.
Okay.
I'm still adding more to the language resources list, so Faroese, Italian, and Dutch still need a bit more resources added to them, but the rest of them have a pretty good amount of resources, so it's for a good jumping off point.
Okay, and are most of those free resources, or do you also have affiliate links?
Yeah, I do have some affiliate websites as well, but usually they're Italki link or trying to think of what else, but usually I like to list them in categories as well, so if it's a dictionary site or if it's a YouTuber or something that they could immerse themselves.
Nice. Okay, good. And I'm trying to imagine your typical language learning day, if there is such a thing as a typical day for a polyglot. But how early do you get up in the morning? I've seen other people talking about they're most productive at 4:30 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning. Do you ever do that?
I usually don't start in early in the morning, but because of my full-time job that I go to, it kind of requires me to wake up early, so I'd probably say I start language learning around 7 a.m.
And what would be, do you have a routine in place?
I did at one point, but it needs to be reworked around. But yeah, for a while I was using Link every day and using Memrise and using SRS flashcards like Anki.
And in between some of those flashcard systems like Anki or Memrise, what differences do you see in those two platforms?
Anki, you can make flashcards for anything, so it's pretty much very free form of what you can create with flashcards. With Memrise, it's more user-created, but a lot of them do have audio with it, so you can actually hear certain words or phrases being spoken by a native speaker.
Okay, so if you mention the fact that there's audio on Memrise, does that mean Anki does not include audio?
I haven't seen audio on Anki, but it doesn't mean it's not there.
Okay. Oh, well, I'll do some research to see. Okay. And so you recommend a lot with the flashcard systems and using Italki for finding. Would you recommend Italki a little more language exchange partners, or private tutors, or professional teachers, or just all of them?
I would recommend the professional teachers and the informal tutors are really good, especially if you're just looking for a teacher or somebody that you can just speak and let whatever you're trying to speak get out. Mm-hmm. I haven't tried the language partner thing yet.
Okay.
So I can't speak on that.
Okay. Yeah. Have you tried, let's say, there's a new platform that I've been using the last year called GoSpeaky. Have you tried that one at all?
I don't think I've heard of that one.
Oh, yeah. It's, there's a lot of up-and-coming web apps, and this is an extremely growing market, but about a year ago I started, it's called GoSpeaky, and I think their website, gospeaky.com, mm-hmm. and it started to evolve as maybe, it's been wonderful to see them growing, because there's like two or three programmers, and actually I've been lucky to be kind of in contact with them, and they've contacted me off and on to say, hey, we're launching this new feature, what do you think? And so it's been nice to be able to take part in that kind of a feedback process with the programmers, that they're so accessible. And it started out kind of a chat feature, and then including a video chat feature. I was testing that a little bit. Then they started to include user interests and hobbies, so you could filter users. Then they started to create a correction system. So when you're in your messages, you can correct somebody, and kind of a green light, red light, kind of a on the text. What else have they added? They've started to create kind of a posting system similar to Facebook. So then they've included groups per language. So instead of just finding a specific one-on-one language learner, it's been possible to include, you can kind of pick and choose a couple people to put in a group, or they might have a posting page per language. So they just keep adding more and more things. Most recently they added kind of gamification and a lot more development of like badges. And that kind of reminds me a little bit of on Duolingo, with like the little fire flame of how many years you've been active. So they're doing a really good job on that kind of loyalty and keeping the users active and trying to create a community environment. So it's really nice to see programmers who are kind of responding to their users and trying to add new features, and because there's a lot of apps that are out there, and it feels like they just want to make a quick buck, or they just want to start doing advertising, or they want to make something kind of hastily built, get it on the market, and then sell it if some other big software developer is interested. But it is really nice to see when you've got developers who are kind of engaged in a language learning process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like those types of apps are a lot more helpful for language learners, mm-hmm. and a lot more useful.
Mm-hmm. I'm just throwing a question out there. Like, have you done any programming yourself? Do you know any of that?
I've done, my programming is pretty basic. I've done like typical web design programming. So like HTML, CSS, a little bit of PHP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I started out with kind of the same thing, like web development, like HTML, JavaScript, CSS, like 3 years ago, and I started to develop my own web apps. And the idea was like, well, I started to do something first in Excel, and that got kind of really, just really ugly with kind of little formulas and cells. And then that evolved into maybe a user form. And then it was a little bit better. But still, it was nothing I could share with students. And a lot of students, they said, oh, okay, I can share this with you on Excel. And they're like, oh, my version of Excel doesn't accept this. The macros are disabled. And so it became just a real big mess. Yeah. So somebody told me, hey, why don't you try to do web development? And I said, oh, okay, this is wonderful. I can do a one-size-fits-all thing on all these browsers. And then little did I know that when you once you get into web design, it's just a can of worms. It's Pandora's box of like cross-platform.
Or you learn the more things you're able to do so easily.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but for a beginner, it's just so overwhelming to say, well, you have to account for mobile devices. You have to account for Internet Explorer, Firefox, Chrome, Safari, and Opera, and all these other browsers. And like, I just want to put something that says hello world. And it just gets so complicated. But over the years, in the past few years, I've been able to get some kind of features that kind of emulate a little bit of kind of memorized Duolingo, Rosetta Stone. And the nice thing is it's my own creation, and I know I can add photos, I can add audio, I can add text, I can experiment with a different script, like for Russian, for the Cyrillic. I can include that, and if I try to do like just a do-it-yourself memorized course, sometimes they're not so flexible.
Sometimes they kind of limit you on what you can and can't learn.
Mm-hmm. Or if you want it to be just really open, mm-hmm. and to say, okay, I want to do target language to source text, and then jump from source audio to target writing, you have to create each one of those units, and it just becomes really, really, really tedious. But mm-hmm. with something that I can develop, I can just put a couple option boxes or drop down lists and just click, 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 and just start to kind of quickly experiment. If you create kind of a dynamic database that can just any combination that I can think of, and just start doing it as quickly as I click that. So it's nice to be able to do that. And one of my projects that I'm getting into right now is, as I'm becoming more connected with other language teachers and independent learners, I've decided I'm going to do like a webinar or a tutorial to kind of teach some people like some really basic of this kind of web design, but with the focus of teaching them how to create your own exercises. So things like fill in the blank, multiple choice, a listening comprehension question based on audio or a video, reading comprehension based on a text, things like that. So if you're interested, I'll keep you posted on that and see how that develops. It'd be nice to, if you have a little bit of a programming background, it'd be nice to get that feedback and to see from both angles as a language learner and with a little bit of familiarity with the kind of programming design. So that's one thing I haven't seen too much online right now is empowering independent learners and empowering teachers to like just, if they have a website, kind of to integrate things, because we are kind of forced to go over to these other platforms like Memrise or create a course on Link or user content somewhere else. But we're really dependent on those people's platforms.
Yeah.
And people have told me, like, what if someday that platform just stopped,
disappears,
disappeared, and your whole kind of business model or your content or even teachers have courses on like Udemy or Teachable, we're just really dependent on these other platforms. So so it's nice to kind of bring everything back to a teacher's one website or a language learner's website.
And that was something I learned from a website creation of creating your business online. Like, that was one of the things they talked about, is don't use like the free websites, like try to create your own content and try to make it so that way it goes through you instead of, because what if that platform were to disappear?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Cool. And okay. And do you see yourself kind of continuing learning new languages, or do you right now kind of want to consolidate?
Yeah, I actually see myself learning Finnish, Spanish, of course, Italian again, mm-hmm. and reviving the French I had from taking years of it in school. So.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, that seems to. So just run me through one more time. So you started with Italian, then uh-huh. Japanese, then mm-hmm. German, and then what after that?
Well, in school, I actually took French in school for three years, and then I took I believe a year of Mandarin just to see how it was, just because it was like the new class that they offered. And then later, I took some Japanese, and then I started learning German on my own.
Okay.
And then I ended up focusing on just Japanese and German, and then Catalan came into the picture.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's a difficult question when we ask people who study several languages, so like, what was the order? And it isn't always so like cut and dry of this one, then this one, then this one. I mean, I think we kind of work in layers, and then it kind of goes like, oh, well, I got some more experience over here, and then I did that, and then something developed over here, so I did that. So it's never always just kind of a progressive, linear.
Yeah. And I think at one point when I was realizing that I had to focus on one language or like one to two languages was at one point, and I mentioned this like on my blog like quite a few times, was I had like 122 different resources for learning like 50 different languages. I realized, oh, I can't learn all of these at one time. I have to like focus on one at a time.
Okay. So how where was that point in your language learning? I mean, how many years into it that you expanded to like 50?
I think it was just from like just being from like the 13-year-old learning Italian and then discovering a language learning community from, it might still be around. It's called Gaia Online.
Gaia, how do you spell that?
G-A-I-A and then online.com.
Oh, okay.
It was basically like an anime type of website with like a bunch of different forums for different topics, and they have a language learning community in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And that language learning community helped inspire me to learn more languages, but sometimes I would get too curious about different languages, and then I'd go back and forth.
Okay. So you feel, I mean, it's great to have a lot of interest in many, mm-hmm. many languages, but it's very easy to get distracted.
Yeah, that's what I felt like.
Okay. So if you're telling, I mean, we don't want to discourage people from learning multiple languages, but if you want to kind of give a word of caution to people out there, what would you kind of say of, kind of be curious, but
stick to the languages that are going to be most important to you, or what you feel is going to be most important to you, even if it's not the most useful language. If it's the one that interests you the most, or that something that really resonates with you, go for those languages and then come back to those when you've gotten to a very like a really good level in the other.
Okay. So kind of build up one, up a few, and then you can be independent enough or strong enough to then develop a little more curiosity. Okay. I in my own experience, I started with Spanish about 20 years ago when I was a first year in high school. And then 2 years after that, I decided to pick up French. And then in my last year of high school, I started taking a German class, like an evening class at a local community college. And then the next year, once I finished college and then I was starting at the university, continue with a little bit of the Spanish. French ended up being my specialization. Mm-hmm. I continued with German. I took a conversational Italian class. I found this Japanese exchange student who was at the college, and I said, hey, I'll pay you to teach me some just basics in this language. my dad had just a tons of resources at the house, so I was listening to Pimsleur tapes just for everything. And he thought I was just crazy because he would come in the room and I had like four or five audio tape recorders, mm-hmm. and I would have one going on Spanish, one going on in French, one in German, one in Italian, and they would just have the same dialogue. But I might just for just the sake of it, take the first lesson, but mm-hmm. start it at random points, and it would just be going one after another, and like tell the woman you don't speak English, or ask her, is she blah blah blah, and invite her to a cafe, and tell her you don't understand, and it would be just going back and forth of like, usted habla español, j'ai pas compris, volen-si un café, and it was just going back and forth, all these things, and my dad just thought I was completely crazy, and I think I was, but it seemed to be this kind of really intense immersion, and it really made, I don't know, I haven't done the research on it, but I think there's something about the brain plasticity where if you just bombard yourself with a lot of content, you start making links in really bizarre ways. So one of the things I try to do with my language programming now is just invite those links to happen where I don't have to be dependent on my native language, English. I can be learning between Spanish and French, or French and Italian, or Portuguese and Spanish, or German and Russian. Mm-hmm. And just let it kind of flow. And that's why I mentioned with like a do-it-yourself memorize course, you can't really just jump around like that. You would have to build this monster of a course, but with something where it is dynamic and you could just have random switching back and forth, it gets possible. And a lot of students, they come back to me and they say, I'm learning Spanish, but I'm trying to learn Italian, and like, I'm scared because these Romance languages are very similar. I'm like, well, embrace that. Kind of don't isolate them. Kind of learn them simultaneously.
Yeah. And I've had that where I would try to think in a language. Like, I would be thinking in Japanese, and then all of a sudden a French word would come out, or a German word would come out, or I speak in German, and then, like, a French word or a Japanese word would come out, or something like that, or... Like, I couldn't remember the word in German, but I could remember it in Japanese, or vice versa.
Nice. Yeah, I've seen that. I mean, when it's a very low level of the language, it can be very frustrating. Like, oh, this thing, how do I say that? And, but if two languages kind of are in the head, I the way I perceive it is kind of like an onion. Like, we have the native language at the core, and then the second language, and maybe like a third language or fourth language. And sometimes I've gotten this feeling like, When I first started learning the German, like, I'd go back to my French. And then if I couldn't find a vocabulary in French, I'd go to my Spanish. And then finally, I'd go to English. And the people in the class, they'd look at me like, you're so weird. German is such a link to English. Why are you trying to look for vocabulary in French or Spanish? And I was like, I'm not doing this on purpose. It's just, I don't know, the way the brain is kind of learning stuff in layers or connecting.
It can be kind of a little... interesting to see, like, how you mix languages on accident. You're like, oh wait, that's a different language.
And this year with that Benny Lewis, the Speak in a Week, I just decided to keep going with it and say, I'm at this point in my language learning, and with the programming skills and just blogging and using YouTube and stuff, I figured, why not just make this a really crazy challenge? And so this year I'm doing one a week for 52 weeks. I've had failures. I have to be very cautious about saying, I'm not at all, like, as a disclaimer, I'm not going to be proficient and excel and be excellent at this in a week. I'm just starting learning. And there was an interview I saw with Alex Rawlings and Ollie Richards, and Alex was saying something about, like, there's a difference between learning a language and learning about a language. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I am not particularly learning this language in a week. Maybe I'm learning about a language in a week. So that really kind of diminishes the challenge.
And that's what I realized with learning out of books for so long is at some point I do need to speak the language, that I can't just... be reading it all the time. I need to actually let it out and practice.
Yeah,
even if it's really bad.
Yeah, that's been really that since this like these last 2 months of discovering Benny Lewis and then also discovering Ollie Richards. I think it's just been a lot of overwhelming advice and tips of people saying, okay, get your head out of the book. Stop being a perfectionist with the grammar and the spelling and like start speaking and like not tomorrow, today. And then discovering italki and then italki challenge, as you mentioned. It's just there's so many people out there who are just really nervous about speaking.
And I think like a lot of it has to do with like speaking with a native speaker then not speaking correctly or feeling really not so smart when you're trying to like speak with a native speaker and they're like, oh, I can't really understand you. I know like when you're learning Japanese and you speak to a Japanese, even if it's really bad, they'll tend to say like, Nihongo wa jozu desu ne, or your Japanese is really good.
Oh, okay. So they're being encouraging. They're being positive. Yeah. Okay. Very good. And yeah, and right now I'm taking Ollie's kind of his course with the like speaking boot camp and like mm-hmm. the language learning foundations. And a couple of things that I really liked in what he says about the speaking boot camp is if you're going to be going through language exchange and taking video chat and audio chat things, what is the big deal if you mess up in the first phone call? If you're going to be doing this for like thousands of times, you kind of diminish, you kind of water down the stigma or the kind of self-consciousness of, I messed up the first time. But I mean, in the big scheme of things, the first time, the first two or three times, it's really not a big deal if I keep doing this. And
especially if you can go back to it later and be like, okay, yeah, I've improved a lot since then.
Mm-hmm. That's what I really like about with the YouTube videos is like what I mentioned with the learning the Russian with that language hearers community is one of the things I just decided to do is I'm going to document my Russian through a YouTube video because I saw a TED Talk with Tim Doner and I think like a TEDx, like a teen talk. And he said he was just doing these videos on YouTube. And I think a lot of people, they would first say that of like, okay, you're crazy. Who wants to watch this? And aren't you going to be very self-conscious? And because there's so many nasty comments that people
when
put
you
on YouTube.
Put yourself out there on the internet, like people criticize everything you do.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you didn't say this word right, or you mispronounced this word, or...
But I mean, that is a possibility. That is a risk. But I think in this language learning community, where there are actually a lot of positive people, and it's really overwhelming to see how much encouragement people want to give other people, and to say, you know what, I applaud your effort, and actually, you inspired me to do the same thing. I'm going to start doing that, and that's really where it's kind of, whoa, okay, I'm not just doing this for myself anymore. I'm doing this because other people are like, they've taken the courage to like see, okay, somebody else is out there doing it. So I'm not just by myself. And so I did that a little bit with a Russian. I need to keep up with it. I haven't had a Russian video in like the past month. I need to do that.
I need to start making more videos on my channel too.
Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of positive feedback and I relate with what you're saying of like, oh, I need to do this and you do that. And we kind of just put pressure on ourselves to kind of, we started this, so we have to keep doing this forever. And it's like, well, no, I mean, life just kind of evolves. Yeah. And if you overextend yourself, it's really difficult to kind of commit to, okay, I'm going to do a YouTube video every day. I'm going to write a blog post every day. I'm going to do a podcast every day. I'm going to do this on Instagram. I'm going to do this on Twitter. It's just, we don't have enough hours in the day, and then we just kind of burn out. If you do too much in a short amount of time.
And I think I've fallen in that trap a couple of times where I would try to like immerse myself as much in a language one day and just like spend as many hours of my free time just trying to do it. And then next day it would be a lot harder. And then it would be like really inconsistent. And so
I've seen people who do like I'm going to do this language for only one day. I'm going to do this language for only one day. So they have like a week plan of Monday is Japanese, Tuesday is German, Wednesday is Spanish. Do you do any of those kinds of planning?
I won't necessarily separate them like to specific days, but I might be like, okay, we'll do 4 hours for Japanese this day and then do 4 hours of German right after it or something like that, or two hours of each or whatever time I do have.
Okay. So how many hours, I mean, overall, I mean, people love numbers, but in reality, it's just like, how many hours per day do you invest in general?
In general, it's probably about like maybe 4 to 5 hours, like on a good day. And then if I have like a lot of extra time, maybe more, but.
And is that in one block of time or do you spread it out?
I try to do it in one block, but if I need to spread it out, I will spread it out too. And okay. I figured that spreading it out actually helps it a lot better.
Okay. What have you seen in terms of the differences if you did one block versus 15 minutes, 30 minutes?
I like to use an app called Clear Focus.
Okay.
Or it's based on the Pomodoro technique where you spend 25 minutes and then you get a 5 minute break and then you go back to it for another 25 minutes. I found that very useful because that way I can keep up with one language and then go do something else, go take a break, go work on something else and then come back to learning the language.
Okay. And with your language goals, do you establish kind of benchmarks like, okay, within a week or this month, I'm going to do this. How do you keep yourself kind of focused and motivated?
I try to say, you know, learn how to say this or be able to express like this in a conversation by the end of the month or by the end of the week, learn 50 different Japanese Chinese characters for or kanji.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you kind of set it in terms of number of words or number of expressions or items. Okay.
I have a very, I guess you could say a very rotating method. So if one method doesn't work for me, I go on to the next one and kind of like go back and forth.
Okay. So, and what about those moments where you're like, oh, I don't want to learn languages today, or, okay, I've told this, my goals to so many people out there, but I don't know what I'm doing today. Like how do you kind of keep yourself motivated, focused on those moments?
Yeah. Those ones can be very hard because like, oh, I didn't spend any time learning a language today. But I do like say, okay, maybe I do need a little bit of a break or something, or okay, I'll take the day off, but I won't like make this like, okay, sometimes you just need a break and then, but I don't like beat myself up over, I didn't spend enough time learning it. If I even spent like maybe 15 minutes in the language, if that's all I could spend on it, then I'm like, good, I devoted time to the language.
Okay. Yeah. I still consider myself a frustrated language learner and I did this language marathon with the language heroes in October. And I tried to say, I'm going to do 2 hours a day. And then that towards the end, it's a marathon. So it got really kind of stressful. And then this time around, I'm doing this for like January through March. And now I'm in like the end of this second month. And I've just completely failed on it. And like, I had so much good momentum at the end of December. Yeah. And then there was a period where like Christmas and the beginning of the year. And then, and I just started to lose a little bit of focus. And then I've been trying to develop like the website and get this podcast running. And so I've just had a lot of these external distractions. I keep learning languages, but I haven't put in so much effort on my Russian. And I realized, like, I talked to somebody the other day and I'm like, I am so rusty after really not too much practice after a month. And I'm like, I feel bad for myself. And then like, I don't want to put myself down or like beat myself up, but it's like, I recognized that I was making progress and then I kind of stopped. And then I recognized the difference here where I'm not putting enough effort in. But on the flip side, I listened to some podcasts And I follow the dialogue almost completely, where like 3 months ago, this was just still very difficult. And I'm like, huh, okay, I am making progress, but not so in a tangible way.
Yeah. And I've noticed that with like a couple languages that I've forgotten about, like if like, for example, with my abandoned French and Italian, like I was still able to understand some things. I'm like, oh, I understand it now. Or I understand like a few, even though I haven't used it in a while, or like with German or Japanese, or if I spent like, let's say I spent my focus on just Japanese and I haven't really spent much time with German. And then I like listen to something in German or like a podcast or like even lyrics to like a music video or something. I'm like, oh, I actually understood that. Or after listening to it like a couple times.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's sometimes a weird experience when you accumulate so many languages. I mean, it's not possible to kind of keep them all maintained. And there was one experience that I had when just before I left Europe, because I was living in I lived in Paris for 6 years, and then I decided to move to Mexico City in 2008. And just before we left, we decided to visit Central Europe. So I gave myself about 6 months to prepare to learn and teach myself Hungarian, Polish, Czech, and brush up a little bit of the German, because we were visiting Vienna. Uh-huh. And I got a lot of good progress, and I was able to order food from the menu, talk to the waiter, ask for directions, things like that. And basically I was able to survive, and that's what my goal was. But after that trip, it's been 7 years, and I really have just not touched those languages so much. And I get this concept that there's kind of like a volcano. There's dormant languages. Uh-huh. And it's kind of like a bicycle, where it's not completely lost. If they're there somewhere, I've acquired language knowledge, I've acquired something about pronunciation, some basic vocabulary, I haven't done anything with them. But all of a sudden, if a Polish speaker approaches me, or somebody who speaks Hungarian engages me in conversation, or maybe even Czech, suddenly lights just turn on that haven't really been activated for a long time. And it's almost a scary experience to kind of like, whoa. So many people say, if you don't use it, you lose it. And I'm like, I'm not completely convinced. Like, okay.
Yeah. I have to agree, because that has happened to me before, where I'm like, I remember I was in like a hostel, and there was a French speaker, and all of a sudden it's like, wait, I actually understand that. Or if it was a language that maybe I don't actually know really well, or I was able to instantly recognize, oh, they're speaking Mandarin, or they're speaking this language or that language, or Hungarian or Russian or Slovak or something like that.
Cool. Yeah. So I think that can kind of give some motivation to people who, I mean, it's great to have the curiosity to learn several languages.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to figure out, like, where is this tipping point where if you give yourself kind of an intense period of time, and you invest that, and you get proficient enough that you can have a conversation, and you can recognize the language when you're hearing it, and you could say a few words. If you stop, if you take a big break, it's not completely gone. So you can come back to it, and if you give yourself kind of a brush up review, and then suddenly you get this other language that's proficient enough, and you kind of put that on the shelf and try to like put your focus on something else, that is possible. So I think that's kind of good feedback for people who do want to learn several languages.
Especially if they're very similar languages, you might find that, oh yeah, now you know the word for, let's say, cat in one language, and it happened to be the same in another one you wanted to learn. But
yeah, I with this language learning goal this year, I've had a really weird experience with Arabic, because I have not at all taken I'm going to learn Arabic in a week. No, that's not going to happen. Yeah, people tell me like, okay, that's a really challenging language. But I've started to learn Arabic through the back door, so to speak, because I started a little bit with some Swahili. And the greeting with Swahili was like habari yako, and I just learned that as Swahili. And then I got into something with Persian like a week or two ago. And Persian, where there's something like with the omniglot, where it's like long time no see.
Yeah.
The teacher on Italki who I was speaking with, he said, oh, well, what we're really saying here is like a lot of time without news. And there had something in there of like abar. I'm like, huh, that sounds like Swahili. And they're like, no, this is Arabic. And I'm like, oh, wait, okay. So I start making these really weird language ties because of the influence that a language might have on other surrounding languages because of the geography or commercial ties, cultural ties, arts and language and music. And so it's really this strange concept where I'm not learning Arabic head on, but I'm acquiring some vocabulary words thanks to other languages that have been influenced by Arabic. And I think also with I tried to do a little bit of Swedish, and the German was helping me, but I didn't want to be too dependent on my German because I'm like, okay, these are two separate languages, kind of have some respect for the culture. Don't just assume that they're the same. And then it also had a lot of similarities with English. And I'm like,
oh yeah,
this language seems too good to be true. I understand so much, but I have to be careful when I'm speaking. And then the pronunciation was a little crazy.
Swedish is a pitch language too. And your accent kind of can switch the word's meaning if you're not careful.
Oh, okay.
It's not like Chinese or Vietnamese where it's like really tonal.
Oh, okay, I see. Okay.
Where if you say a certain word in a certain way, it can mean a totally different thing.
Okay. Yeah, I know with the Chinese, like the tones, like the like rising, falling, kind of rising, falling, and then flat. Yeah. And but what would be an example in Swedish that would kind of change the meaning?
Then versus them. So like the spirit versus the breath.
Okay. Can you say that one more time?
Them.
Okay. So in the first example, you were stressing the first syllable.
Yeah.
And in the second example, you were stressing the second word or second. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Like it dips and then it kind of goes up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. What that sounds like to me is in Spanish, where we have the accent marks, where like papa, where you're stressing the first syllable is potato, or if you add the article, it might be the Pope. And if you do papa and you stress the second syllable, you're talking about a father or dad.
Yeah.
So there are words in there that like, even also in the conjugations, like hablo is I speak, and hablo with the accent on the O would be like he, she, it, or usted, the you formal kind of spoke. So you could switch the meaning based on the word stress. And I suppose with English words as well, of like record and record, record being a noun. Noun and record being the verb.
Mm-hmm. Or wound and wound.
Okay, yeah, you kind of, same spelling, but you change that. Okay, yeah. But there's a lot of examples that we can go through in many different languages. We'll have to dedicate probably another podcast to handle this. But I'd say, I mean, we could keep going, and I really appreciate your feedback. It's been a very pleasurable conversation with you.
Oh, yeah.
And, so if people want to get in contact with you and see what you're blogging about, see your resources, your website is?
CocoThePolyglot.net.
Perfect. And they can send you an email through the website as well?
Yes, they can, through the contact form on the website. Or through CocoThePolyglot@gmail.com.
Okay. And you're on other platforms like Twitter?
Yes. It's just CocoThePolyglot, one word, on Twitter. And Instagram, it's the same way. And then Facebook, it's CocoThePolyglot as well.
Oh, so you have a page on
it. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. So that's an easy brand to remember on a lot of these social networks. Great.
Yeah.
Okay. And if people want to take classes with you on italki? Are you still available? Are you taking on new students?
Right now, yeah, I'm taking on new students. My italki profile is Soren, which is spelled S and then O with the line through it, R-E-N.
Okay, and if I'm not able to put that O with the slash through it, am I still going to be able to find your site, do you think? Or is it a separate account, or it would...
I'm not really sure. They could try it, but if it doesn't work, they could always copy and paste it if they need to.
Okay, perfect. Oh, well, I'll put a link in the show notes for this podcast. That'll be easier for people to click on the link instead of trying to get the
yeah. Oh,
perfect. Okay. And so thank you very, very much for participating in the show. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah, so we'll have to probably schedule another one. We just have a lot of things to talk about. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Great. Okay, so if people would like to take an English class with me or follow my language meanderings, you can reach me at hugginsinternational@gmail.com. That's HUGGINS international@gmail.com. Or you can visit my website, hugginsinternational.com. So thank you very much for listening to this podcast. Thank you again, Coco, for participating. And we look forward to another podcast with you in the future.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Take care. Bye.